Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Children's Encyclopedia of the Earth by Michael Albee, a 2007 thing. I've just come off an exercise routine, so I'm a little bit breathless. This is episode 4. We're working through section 3 of the book, which is Inside Earth, and we've looked at, I suppose, plate tectonics, rock formation, the three different types of rocks. It's a bit dodgy about how they've gone across here. We've gone non-precious but not lovely minerals. You can imagine children like looking at this. I just took the opportunity to look at the composition of the core. Is sort of mostly iron and nickel, and the mantle, which is above it, is mostly, by weight, 44% oxygen, something like 14 or 20% magnesium, silicon. It's only 5% iron in there. There's actually, it's mostly silicon, and so the upper mantle does indeed have OVUV. Gee, this little... Sorry, I'm just having a bird attack me here. OV. Can you hear it in the background? OV. And that's just an iron, sort of the most basic iron sandstone mix, basically putting out. This section here is about precious and semi-precious metal. I'll just read it to you. In order to be called precious gemstone, a mineral must be satisfied three conditions. It must be beautiful, durable, and rare. I suppose it must be. A precious gemstone. Diamond, ruby, sapphire, emerald are the four best known precious gemstone. Amethyst was once a gemstone worn by royalty, but when large deposits were found in Brazil, it became too common. Sulfur is strikingly yellow colour, but it would break if it were worn. Alexandrite is perhaps the rarest and most prized gemstone because of its strange ability to change colour from vivid green in a day to intense reds at night. Well, she was able to have to do that. Semi-precious minerals, like tourmaline and quartz are beautiful, but not, but quite common. So, I'll have to look at Alexandrite. And so you can imagine kids being interested in precious gems. I love cat's eye. Okay. Diamond. A precious carbon mineral is the hardest of all gemstones. Making diamonds. For carbon to form a diamond crystal, it needs to be extremely high pressure. It's only found more than 90 or 150 kilometers below the Earth's surface. Rising to the surface, kimberlite may now form from the mantle, moves up the crust, bringing diamonds with it. It must travel quickly or the diamonds will turn back into carbon. So we've got the Kimberleys. Exploding bubbles, gas bubbles from the magma near the surface begins to boil. The water, I don't know why you say it boil. Water in the surrounding rocks boils too, causing an explosion like a shotgun blast, forming diamonds. Afterwards, broken rock and magma harden volcanoes, funnel-shaped throat. Erosion carries some of the diamonds to nearby rivers. I think the diamonds are formed deep within the crust. It's a little bit misleading. Azurite, intense blue ore of copper, polished to ornamental use. Sapphires. Blue is the most common colour, sapphires, but orange, yellow stones are also found. I love star sapphires. Cat's eye, chrysoberyl. Fine needles of fibre, as generally reflect a single line of blue light. Oh, I don't know. Amethyst, aquamarine, delicate blue gemstone related to emeralds. Tourmaline, a valuable chemical makeup. Tourmaline comes in many kinds, variable kinds of colour. Imperial topaz, deep orange crystals such as this made it harder to find than the pale blue variety. Star ruby, I can't say star ruby, the star ruby ball bearings, artificial ball bearings in nuclear reactors. It's just so beautiful. Light shining off this tiny needles in the ruby creates a floating star-like reflection. It's such a fantastic thing to do. Quartz perfectly formed crystals like this are prized by collectors. Emeralds, the most valuable emeralds, have a rich green color. I think the green is generally quartz. Now, I should say opals are a metamorphic sedimentary rock. Transparent quartz, this transparent gem also occurs in colors which are purple and yellow. Birthstones. Okay. Birthstones go back to the time of Moses. He made a breastplate for his son Aaron, the high priest, which is set 12 colored gemstones representing the tribes of Israel. Gemstones later became associated with the months of the year and the zodiac. Birthstones supposedly have a magical power, bringing rare good luck. Okay, so it's January garden, February amethyst, March aquamoon, diamond April, emerald May, pearl June. Pearl is not a gemstone, mate. God. Ruby July, August peridot, which is ovaline. This iron. Okay. September, you'd be pissed off if you're in August. September sapphire, October opal, November topaz and turquoise. They wouldn't have had opal. Very much opal in the old days. Metals. This is a good way of looking at things. Nerve metals such as gold, tin, copper are found naturally in their pure form. The discovery that lumps of metal could be beaten and cast made possible for people to create better tools and weapons. Gold was first wrapped about 8,000 years ago, but its pure form is too soft to be very useful. About 6,000 years ago, people in Mesopotamia discovered that when tin was added to molten copper, stronger metal was called bronze was formed. This mixture, or alloy, is durable and long-lasting. When people learned to extract iron from its rocky ore, it replaced bronze. Hematite is the most important ore. Is heated to extract the metal. It's typically a kidney stone. So, look, that's pretty amazing. Working in bronze, over 3,000 years ago in China, people in the Shang dynasty traded bronze objects. They used clay molds to mass produce ornately decorated vessels. Pretty amazing. Native metals. Gold, silver, copper are called native metals because they are found in a pure form. Other metals such as aluminium, iron have to be extracted from ores. Native metals do not break down or weather easily. Iron, however, readily combines with oxygen. It rusts when exposed to air. Some metals, such as aluminium, need a lot of energy to extract. As a result, they have only recently become available to useful to humans. Gold, native gold, is often found with quartz. It's free like crystals, a habit. Gold has long been precious metal. This death message we have an Egyptian king who began his reign in 1361 BC at the age of 9 and died at 18. His mask is decorated with precious stones. Copper. It's generally found in branching crystals. It's covered with blue-green film and become into contact with air. Hot boil culture of Ahu, USA, flourished from 300 BC to 500 AD. Craftsmen, it was a long time, weren't they? Craftsmen used copper to make artifacts such as this raven. We call it an artifact. Silver, native form, is long, thin crystals, branches, and black tarnished skin. Peru was once a rich source of silver. This pendant engraved with a god wearing a feathered axe headdress is from the Chimi people. The culture reached a peak in the 1400s. Okay, fossils. Most of what we know about life on Earth comes from the study of fossilized remains of living things. Fossils are created over a long period of time. From plant or animal to become fossil, it must die in the right place, be covered by sediment, escape decay, scavenging animals and erosion. Fossil record has many gaps. Organisms with hard body parts, such as shells, skeletons and teeth, are more readily fossilized than soft body animals. And water dwellers are more readily fossilized than land dwellers. The fossil record makes an exciting reading. As well as the stories of individual species, it charts the history of the whole living world. showing dead end lines, periods of rapid growth, and devastating mass extinctions. I love that. That's beautifully put together. Now they've got a linear line here and a coil here as well. So the linear line is from bone to stone. All living things die, but few become fossils. Fossils form when hard remains of living creatures are buried and protected beneath the sediment. Soft-bodied creatures decompose too quickly to preserve well. Say from scavengers, a dinosaur dies, its body sinks to the bottom and still in the lake. Soft parts decay, leaving hard parts. Covered by sand, hard parts are preserved, preventing them from decaying and washing away. Compressed layers. Layers of sediment built up and flatten the skeleton and slowly hardens to solid rock. Uplift and erosion. After millions of years, rock rises again to the surface and the bones are exposed. Now, we've got these beautiful things. Paleogene, a bivalve mollusk, which looks like a modern one. Cretaceous, Tyrannosaurus rex. Oh, this is going backwards in time. Sorry, mate. Precambrian, okay, the Earth formed as, so I might, don't know what time to see Lily Syrian. Yeah, she was, I do think they have got things wrong. Precambrian, a worm or polyp. What time is that? A trilobite. Is, oh, so that's from 550 million years ago. The Cambrian period is between 542 and 488 million years. The Octavian is between 44 million years and 448. And they have a ammonite, one of those coily things. You've got, we're in the Silurian period, about 416 years ago, the Devonian, which I can't see what the years is, but that's 360 to 416 million years ago. So it's still in the sea. Now we get to Carboniferous, about 360 to 300. You've got dragonflies. Then you've got amphibians, up to 50 to 300 to 50, and then you've got the Jurassic, which is the reptiles, and then you've got the Jurassic and Cretaceous, which is you've got which is the most amazing thing. So you've got the Jurassic period and the Cretaceous period from around 200 million years ago to 65.5 million years ago, and you've got the T-Rex, which is in the Cretaceous, and Jurassic Park doesn't have T-Rexes. Okay, general story, and there's Hort and Sap. These gnats were trapped about 440 million years ago in a sticky tree sap and hardened to become amber. Many are missing legs and wings, which they lost as they struggled to free themselves. Plants and invertebrates. That's what they have to say. When plants become fossils, they are petrified or turned to stone. Fine details of the delicate leaves can be preserved in mudstone. More durable plant parts, such as tree trunks and branches, survive rough conditions and are found in sandstone and volcanic ash. Invertebrates, animals without backbones, are more commonly found as fossils than their soft-body relatives. Mollusks are one of the largest groups in the animal kingdom, and their fossils are common. These include clams, mussels, snails, and ammonites. Coral fossils may be found in limestone. Sometimes whole forests can be petrified. This happens when the water containing silica replaces living tissues of trees and minerals with minerals. Pieces of petrified wood and terraces are scattered over the ground in the Petrified Forest National Park in Arizona, USA. Pretty amazing place to look at. Okay, they've got a brachiopod. A two-shelled marine animals look like mollusks, but are closely related, are not closely related to them. Ptolemites look like squids. These are sort of like shells, combination of shell and octopus in them. Nostocrates, as they grow, cephalopods add chambers to their shell. Bryozoan, this delicate fan-like creature dotted with tiny holes, are preserved in shale. Fern leaf, gastropod, trilobites are the little, it's a bit like cockroaches, I don't know, ginkgo woods, amber, birch sail, this animal uses tentacles to bring food towards its central mouth. They've got all these sort of squids with shells in them. Vertebrates, which is us. Vertebrates are animals with internal skeletons or hard bones. They've got backbones. The oldest specimen occurred 50 million years ago. Vertebrate fossils include fish, amphibians, reptiles, dinosaurs, birds, mammals, and humans. So we're not humans. They're not mammals. Vertebrates are not found as often as plants or vertebrate fossils, especially complete specimens. This is because their remains are usually eaten by scavengers soon after they died, and their bones scattered. So they've got here pictures of a squirrel, a archer ferrothax, and a small feathered dinosaur. Then they've got Homo sapiens, from Homo habilis up to Homo erectus. Tyrannosaurus rex thrown in here, a Jurassic fish. Frozen in time, whole animals can be perfectly preserved in ice if they freeze quickly. The woolly mammoths, rhinoceros and bison from 10,000 years ago have been found in Siberia. Last meal in their stomachs. Iceman was found, a 45-year-old man in 1991. He lived about 5,300 years ago. Inuit baby died 500 years ago and was left on the icy cave in Greenland. The child's body and clothes were perfectly preserved in the dry, cold air of the cave. Well, that looks pretty spooky. The Inuits were coming down, hassling poor old Europeans. Reconstructing fossils, which obviously kids are interested in. Recreating an animal from its fossilized remains is like putting together a jigsaw puzzle. It takes a lot of patience to find the fossil pieces of the puzzle. Vertebrates have more than 200 bones, and the fossils may be scattered over large areas. Each piece must be numbered and location mapped before they can be prized from the rock. Delicate fossils need to be coated with plaster to protect them from before they are moved. In the laboratory, there are many hours of work to clean and prepare the fossils. Only then can the usable puzzle piece put together, missing pieces added to be reconstructed the original animal. Flesh out the baryonks. Starting with the tail of the baryonks, a reconstruction begins. Missing bones are sketched and made. Based on the size and shape of the bones, ligaments and muscles are then added. Finally, the skin is rarely fossilized. The color and texture of living relatives like crocodiles are used. So they're showing that they've got a few missing bones. Fossils detectives. The Parasaurolophus is a plant-eating dinosaur that lived in the Cretaceous, which is like everything, late things, with the T-Rex. It lived at a dangerous time of huge predators like the Tyrannosaurus. Where at large, it probably lived in herds for protection. The first fossilized skeleton was discovered in 1921 in Alberta, Canada. It's one of the most complete dinosaurs ever found. It's been carefully preserved. Scientists have studied the fossil and worked out how the Parasaurus used the unusual bony crest. They believe it was like a trumpet and warned others when the predators were near. It's quite amazing. I don't see how this actually works. Now, the bones of the baryonks were dug out of the clay in the southern pit. We laid out that line so the missing pieces were reconstructed. There's the original fossil remains, and it was found in basically London. Well, here's the Diplodocus. It's got actual scales on the back of its head, according to this one. Dinosaur footprints are called trace fossils because they're not actual remains of the animal. Crocodile footprints in a sequence may ask questions about how the animal lived. Did they run on four legs? Did they travel in groups? Did they hunt? Diplodocus was a heavy, long-necked plant eater with straight necks and large feet and strong toes. This animal ran on two legs. The Deinocles. Deinocles is a small, agile dinosaur that left fleet-footed tracks. Now, we call this a Triceratops, but this is called the Clasmorus. It's a heavy plant-eating dinosaur that had horns and armored plates for protection. The Allosaurus was a large but agile hunter, and with long, muscular legs for fast running. There it was. It's pretty awful. So that's the end of that one, and we're going to the next chapter called The Dynamic Earth, which we'll get going. It tends to go back again to volcanoes. Okay, so this is section 4. See if I can continue reading this. Will it get the better of me? I hate doing this. I'll see if I can read this to the bitter end, mate. Okay, now this is a lovely diagram of volcanoes showing magma coming up, a fissure, a darker vertical channel of magma, a lava flow, and side vent. A lack of a mass of magma that pushes rock layers upwards. A sill, a sheet of magma that forms between layers of rocks. Anatomy of volcano, this is called. Magma rises from a pool of molten rock called a magma chamber, a caldera. Lava rises through a central vent. Pyroclastic flow, torrents of hot lava, ash and gas. It's just, a classic, it's like a liquid of the ash cloud. Lava erupts through the crater. The important thing is that the ash cloud is aerated silica. Volcanoes form where magma, incredibly hot liquid rock, rises from the Earth's upper mantle in collection chambers just below the crust. As more magma arises, the pressure inside the chamber increases until the magma rises through fissures and overflows into the ocean. When it reaches the surface, magma becomes lava. The type of eruption depends on the composition of the lava. So you really basically have to have less conductive rock that it goes into. Otherwise, the heat would just go away. You have to have a really poor conduction rock. And the magma has to be good at conduction, so the heat goes into it. The type of eruption depends on the composition of the lava. If it is thick and contains huge amounts of gas, the eruption releases cinders and clouds of ash in an explosion. If the lava is thin with little gas, it flows across the surface. If the magma comes into contact with a layer of groundwater, the volcano explodes violently, and that's exactly what happens to the volcanoes in the Blue Mountains. Okay, well, there's fissure volcano, cinder cone volcano, shield volcano, and composite volcano. The fissure volcanoes form as the lava erupts on the fracture of the Earth. Shield volcano forms built a low hill. A cinder cone is made with cinders erupt from the central vent. A composite volcano is made with layers of ash and minerals around side cones. How a lava tube forms. And I can say there is some pretty spectacular lava tubes out here in Australia. How a lava tube forms. Lava hardens on exposure to air, but it continues to flow through tunnels beneath the surface. When the lava stops flowing, the tunnel remains, allowing hollow lava tubes up to 100 feet, 30 meters wide, and 50 meters high. So it's basically the cooling skin. You can imagine like hot chocolate, pouring down. I wonder if you could do that as a theme. Lava rivers develop a hard skin soon after the lava starts flowing. The hard skin, this becomes harder and forms the tube through the lava keeps flowing. It's an important thing is that this particular lava has low thermal conductivity, so when it cools, it forms an insulation layer. Magma is hot. When it reaches the surface, its temperature is usually 1,200 degrees Celsius, which is why it glows red. Lava flowing down the side of a volcano and across a nearby land is a mixture of molten rock, blocks of rock, and gas wells out of the cooling lava. people want to see this. Oh, this is a mountain chain hotspot volcano, so it's basically all of down Australia, all down the side of us. Beneath the Earth's crust, far from the edges of the tectonic plate, there are places where very hot material in the mantle rises all the way up to the base of the crust. These are known as hotspots. The mantle rock is too hot and it melts, and current solid rock forms magma chamber, eventually making it erupt to the surface of the volcano. Tectonic plates move, but the hotspot remains the same, which means that you can't have bloody convection. You know, it's so stupid. Now I see it. Now I see what they're talking about. Okay. Tectonic plates move, but hotspots remain the same. When the plates move over a hotspot, the chain of volcanoes is created. The ocean hotspot can produce a lot of volcanic islands like Hawaii. I did a beautiful lesson about this particular island, the evolution and the hotspots at the same time. The diagram illustrates the birth, life and death of hotspot volcanoes. The front active volcanoes are erupting above the ground. Behind them, older volcanoes have become worn down by erosion. Those with rims are fringed with coral reefs and atolls who lie under water called seamounts. We do have beautiful seamounts around the place. Key hotspots. Well, we have one down here. A hotspot for us is now in Australia. This is the one hotspot is now in Warrnambool. We've got a big volcano here. Look, it's beyond me. Okay. Links in the chain. Tectonic plates passes over hotspots. A series of volcano forms. Geologists can use these to trace the movement of the plate. So you can't have hotspot and convection. You can't have the two together. Rising magma in the hotspot produces a volcano in the land under the sea. New volcanoes form and the plate moves forward. The chain of volcanoes or volcanic islands mark the passage of the hotspot. That takes passage over the hotspot. Opening in the roof of a lava tube in Hawaii reveals the furnace below. The islands are a chain of hotspot volcanoes. Iceland formed over a hotspot. Its landscape is littered with bubbling mud pools and steaming craters. Is that true? Well, you could just put one little bit over there. I can't, you know, that gets me, because they've got Iceland is actually on a plate junction, so you can't have two. You can't have a hotspot and a plate junction at the same time, or the plate junction is just happens to be sitting over a hotspot. I suppose that's possible. Okay, a particular place called it must be Kilauea, C-I-L-A-U-E-A. Hawaii's Big Island. Kilauea is located to Hawaii's Big Island. It's one of the five volcanoes on the island. It's not the largest volcano. That honor goes to Mauna Loa, but it's the most active. Kilauea is the most visited volcano on the planet. Kilauea, the Big Island of Hawaii, is one of the world's most active volcanoes. It may have started erupting 600,000 years ago and has been erupting continuously since 1983. It can throw thousands of lava 600 meters into the air. The volcano makes more than 13% of the area of the island, and its volume reaches 60 kilometers deep into the earth. Because it's constantly erupting, Kilauea is still growing, but it's also falling apart as landslides carry huge amounts of debris away from the center of the volcano towards the sea. According to Hawaiian legend, Kilauea is a home to Pele, the volcano goddess. Thank you very much for that. Types of eruptions. There are five main types of eruptions. Scientists have described them as follows. Hawaiian. Large amounts of runny lava erupt and provide a wide, low volcanoes. Pelean. Blocks of thick, sticky lava are flowed by burning cloud of ashes. Strombolian. Small, sticky lava bombs and ash gas throwing cinders erupt. Vulcan. Violent explosions shoot out over a large area. And Pelican. Cinder gas and ashes are thrown a great distances high into the air. I can't... There's just tops of eruptions. They have to take me. Okay. Kilauea is a Hawaiian style or shield volcano. It shoots out almost continuous eruptions of lava and can travel up to 10 kilometers an hour. So they've got the Earth's core. I don't know whether I particularly like this. Mankerville vent earthquake. This is bizarre. They've got earthquakes happening inside the mantle. I just don't believe any of this. Earthquake oceanic crust. Site of eruption, magma chamber near Earth's surface, the caldera, plants growing on volcanic soil. I just think this is completely bizarro. Volcanoes around the world. People love volcanoes. Most volcanoes occur along the ridges of the tectonic plates, where the oceanic and continental plates collide. The denser oceanic plates are pushed under the lighter continental ones as the process known as subduction, as well as new crusts continually formed by magma as it rises to the surface and the force oceanic plates to separate. Both types of interaction plates produce volcanoes and earthquakes. Well, I don't know whether it's true. All boundaries of the Pacific plates are active. It's really subduction, the ones which are the worries. They form near the continuous line of the oceanic volcanic mountains extending a horseshoe place for 40,000 kilometers. The volcanoes surrounding the ocean are often called the Ring of Fire. The ring includes many famous volcanoes, Fuji, Pinaburo, Temora, Character and Mount St. Helens. Danger zones. 3/4 of the world's active volcanoes, including some of the most violent, occur in the ring surrounding the Pacific Ocean. The northern movement of the African plate and the Eurasian plate has spread volcanoes in southern Europe. In 1963, the volcano on the Mid-Atlantic Ridge produced an island of Surtsey, Iceland. Well, there you go. Dust and ash from extremely violent volcanic eruptions can sometimes rise above the troposphere and reach the ozone layer, stratosphere, where they remain for months. They stop the sunlight reaching the Earth and the world's climate becomes colder. That's about the mini ice age and stuff like that. Mauna Loa, Hawaii, USA, 1984, the Earth's largest volcano and has been active for thousands of years. More recently erupted in March 24th and 15th, 1984. No one lost their lives. Previous eruptions have destroyed villages. So this is the large volcano. Krakatoa in Indonesia in 1883. Krakatoa emerges in a series of increasingly violent eruptions heard in Perth, Australia, 3,100 kilometres away. And throughout 25 cubic kilometers of solid particles into the height of more than 30 kilometers. Tauira, New Zealand, 1886. This volcano erupted from its three peaks and sent smoke and ash columns high in the air. About 120 people lost their lives. Very important facts to know. Volcano landscapes. I think people love volcanoes. Kiddies do. When volcanoes spill molten rocks across the Earth's surface, they remake the surrounding landscape. The Deccan Plateau in India consists of sheets of volcanic basalt that covers more than half a million square kilometres and is more than a mile, more than 1.6 kilometres thick. The plateau is formed when, a period of a million years, lava from a hotspot volcano spread out across a third of India. The lava hardened to form a thick layer of basalt. Eroded volcanoes are dramatic landscape features. Britain has no active volcanoes, but Arthur's Seat on the skyline of Edinburgh, Scotland, is an extinct volcano. Calderas, which are created when the top of a volcano collapses into an empty magma chamber, often fill with water to form distinct lakes. So caldera means cauldron, doesn't it? Reading the clues, landscapes contain evidence of past volcanic activity. The erosion of the softer rocks exposed the tectonic basalt plugs of solidified lava and dikes hardened magma. Sills are small lava sheets, usually about 30 metres thick. Calderas have small cinder cones or craters from later eruptions. When Clutera floods, its center cone becomes an island. Maybe some of the times we often have it, maybe a whole series of volcanoes erupting around the caldera, making columns. Cooling lava cools from the surface downwards and shrinks and hardens. Vertical rocks, vertical cracks appear and grow towards each other, and so you get these hexagons. Often get the basalts. You can see that up the top of the Blue Mountains, we've got basalt sheets up the top. These form when the cracks join up, and so Giant's Causeway in Northern Ireland. Of course, I did a whole science comprehension thing where this is just totally misexplained. Making plugs. Active volcanoes. Magma rises through the vent of volcanoes. Eruption ends and the plug forms. I think they've repeated themselves here because they did that one before. Shiprock, New Mexico. Oh, well, this, we've got more than enough in Australia to talk to you about. Craters and calderas. Craters are the funnel-shaped hollows or cavities that form from the openings of vents in volcanoes. The simplest craters occur on top of volcanic vents and usually have a diameter of about 1 kilometre or less. Sometimes the magma melts and some of the rock around the mouth is carried away, creating a crater at the side of a volcano. A caldera is formed when the eruption empties the magma chamber and the roof is not strong enough to support the weight and falls down. Later volcanoes become active again, erupting through the same vent to form a cinder cone inside the caldera or on the edges, as it happens in Australia. Mount Aso in Japan, the country's largest active volcano, standing 1.5 kilometres above sea levels. Caldera measures 114 kilometres if you walk around the rim. The lake fills caldera at Ethiopia. The aerial view reveals circular shape and steep sides. Okay, blowing at the top. This is some things. So there are four sections here. A complete volcano grows above the magma chamber beneath the surface. Ash, gases and lavas erupt from the central vent. Two, the next stage, the eruption becomes more violent, throwing up ash high in the air. The eruption reduces the amount of magma in the chamber. The climax, the magma chamber is partially empty. The magma sinks below the roof and the magma, leaving an empty space. Collapse, the roof of the magma chamber can no longer support the weight of the volcano. It collapses downwards along faults in the central vent. So this is like it's not like a thing. Volcanoes and other planets. The first probes have found 9 volcanoes on Mars, 5 on Venus, 4 on Io, a moon of Jupiter, and many on Neptune's moon Triton. But all these volcanoes resemble Earth. Some erupt sulfur, and volcanoes in Triton erupt liquid nitrogen and methane. Olympus Mons is on Mars, the solar system's largest known volcano. It's more than 4 times higher than Mount Mauna Loa in Hawaii. Seen from directly above, the extent of the lava flows can be seen with a caldera. I think this would be on Mars. I want to explain that's happening to you. Coming across earthquakes, why not tell? These are things that love kids like. The Richter scale, showing that, you know, 5 is a scale of 10, they're showing up there. An earthquake is a violent release of energy in the Earth's crust. In a large rock, this is why it's got to be crust, and they've shown earthquakes in the mantle. When a large rock mass moves suddenly along faults below the ground, the movement shakes the ground above. Earthquakes often happen because the rocks are being pushed in two directions, usually because of the movement of tectonic plates. Volcanic activity can also cause earthquakes. The place in the crust where the break happens is called the hypocenter. That's in the earthquakes. The epicenter is above, isn't it? The place on the surface immediately above the hypocenter is the epicenter. A shallow earthquake has a hypocenter less than 70 kilometers above the surface. Intimate zones occur 300 kilometers down. Deep earthquakes happen at depths greater than 300 kilometers. Well, let's see about deep earthquakes. It's interesting to see here. Oh, it's lovely. This is a fantastic thing. Let's show this scene, beautiful scene, the folded scene, where they show from nice to complete and absolute destruction as you go up to 9. And unfortunately, they've got Roman numerals here. Measuring earthquakes. The magnitude of earthquake is usually measured by the Richter scale based on the amount of energy released. The Mercalli scale is an alternative measure and divides in 1897 by Giuseppe Mercalli. It divides earthquakes into 12 categories according to observations of the damage caused. Okay, so Richter is seismic, Mercalli is whatever it is. So I'm just going to read you all. 1. People feel no movement beneath them. Number 5, sleeping people wake, doors swing, and dishes break. I love this thing, this Giuseppe scale. And, 8 is chimneys fall, tea branches break, and furniture overturns. Ground moves in waves, widespread devastation is the worst one. Okay, now they have the Richter scale, but they also have Japanese earthquakes. Under the islands of Japan, 3 plates jostle. Philippine plate and Pacific plate for position. The southeast, the Philippine plate slides beneath the Eurasian plate. In the east, the Pacific plate dives under the Eurasian plate, the Philippine plates as well. The result is Japanese people experience regular earthquakes. I'm going to say what I did when I was doing an earthquake machine. Traditionally, the Japanese blamed earthquakes on Namsu, a catfish, usually the deity of Kashmir, held in Namsu drown. But if he was distracted, Namsu threshed about, shaking the ground. Oh, okay. So this, the problem is catfish. The section of the stress ray destroyed in the Kobe 1995 earthquake. Pagodas are designed to withstand earthquakes. Wow, I didn't understand that one. Well, there you go. Pagodas designed to understand. You can well imagine it. Seismic waves. There are different kinds of seismic waves. P waves are the pressure waves. Arrives first, and there's a push and pull. S waves moves the rock up and down. And then there's surface waves on top of that. Rayleigh waves, I suppose. So, pressure waves is shove, and the side-to-side waves, the S waves, travel more slowly. It'd be nice to see the image. Tsunamis. Now, I really want to go back and remember some of this. The tsunami is the name of the Japanese for harbor wave. It begins at the ocean floor with an earthquake or a large underwater landslide. The movement of the ocean floor sends shock waves through the water, like ripples in a pond. Oh, I don't like this. It's more that you suddenly have a landslide and you pull the water down and the water fills the cavity and the wave infilling wave continues through. I think this isn't correct. Traveling at 645 kilometers an hour, but only 3 feet 90 centimeters high. Sailors may not even notice these waves when the waves enter shallow water. Friction with the seabelt slows them down to about 30 kilometers an hour. No. Oh, that's not friction. That's really bad. It's just that the speed is slowed down for more shallow waves. It's just the actual shape of the wave. Wave may come ashore first, causing the sea to retreat. The wave trough may come again. This is not understanding how it works. Followed by a rapid rise in water sweeping inland. More waves follow. Sometimes the tsunami comes ashore as a vertical wall of water. Killer waves. Towering tsunamis is the terrifying sight. As the wave reaches land, it collapses, smacking coastal buildings and hurling boats and land. Often tsunamis are far more destructive than earthquakes that cause them. Yeah, she was, I'm going to have to do, get on top of all this type of stuff. Earthquakes around the world. Earthquakes can happen almost everywhere. In most parts of the world, they are relatively rare. A tremor rattle windows. Australia is almost earthquake free, mind you. But there are certain regions where earthquakes are much more violent. The shakiest parts of a planet lie on the boundaries of the tectonic plates. The most active earthquakes are known as the Ring of Fire around the Pacific Ocean. North of the advance of the Pacific Plate into the Eurasian Plate generates another earthquake zone in Central Asia, Malaysia, and Indonesia. A third zone runs through Africa and Southern Europe along the boundaries of four tectonic plates. Rescue operations. Nations respond to major earthquakes by sending emergency supplies, teams of doctors, firefighters, specialists, and rescue workers. Some rescuers use trained dogs to find people trapped under rubble. Others use thermal imaging equipment. Heavy lifting gear moves pieces of building and rubble. You can see they're losing the plot here. So there's some of the big ones, big earthquakes. Tsang in China was magnitude, what did it measure? This Kashmir in 2005, China at 76. Chile in 60. The strongest earthquake ever recorded was 9.5. This felt far away as Alaska, USA. Oh my godfather. Poor United States people. It was generated a tsunami that devastated Hilo, Hawaii and killed 5,000 people. 5,000 people. Australia ain't got any geysers and hot springs. This is just fun facts. Thousands of years after the last eruption, the area beneath the volcano may still be hot. In these areas, known as geothermal regions, heat rising from ancient magma chambers meets the water trickling down through the ground. Water deep under the ground can be twice as hot as normal boiling water, but the pressure of the cooler water on top stops it from boiling. Oh, gosh. When water overflows to the surface, the pressure is released. The deeper, hotter water runs, a chance of steam explodes upwards. Depending on the pressure, water can be steam, explosion, grunt, fountain, geyser, or bubble out in gently hot springs. When water and hot spring mixes with soil and dissolved minerals, the result lake is boiling mud. Japanese baki monkeys relax in the warmth of hot springs to the island of Honshu, Japan, escaping winter temperature of minus 15 degrees Celsius. People bathe in Iceland's hot springs even in winter to soothe sore muscles and benefit from the salts, mineral waters. Draining. Water, this is a picture of how geysers erupt. Cold water drains and meets the hot rock. The temperature increases to above 100 degrees, but the pressure prevents it from boiling. Expanding hot water expands, rising through fissures and pushing cold water upwards. This releases the pressure of the superheated water. A hot water boils with the pressure relieved, pushing the cold water upwards, and the water boils explosively, ejecting a column of water and steam. Want to see the old geysers? If you want to see the old geyser, glaciers and ice sheets. Antarctica's ice sheet is the largest of the world. It holds approximately 70% of the world's fresh water. If melted, it would raise the sea level by 55 meters. Take that, all of you down. We would have the ocean down here at Glenbrook. A glacier is a huge amount of ice formed by build-up of snow. When the snow falls every year in a place where the temperature rarely rises above freezing, snowflakes compress to ice. The pressure of the newly fallen snowpack holds snowflakes together and compresses them to form solid ice. Each year, snowfall forms a band of scientists tell the age of ice by counting the bands. Because the ice is so heavy, a glacier flows downhill very slowly. If it is contained between the sides of a valley, it's a valley glacier. Okay. Ice sheets are dome-shaped glaciers that form when the winter snowfall exceeds the amount that melts away in the winter months. Glaciers on the move. As glaciers move downhill, they carve a wide U-shaped valley and rips away loose rocks and pushes rocks and debris, called a moraine, in front of it. That's interesting. Yeah, This is bizarre. So, I don't know why they're just putting a moraine. The moraine has got nothing to do with it. They've put it here. At the head of glacier. Head of glacier, head of glacier. Oh, so it's flowing down the... Oh, it's a really bad diagram. Snout or end of glacier. Okay, this is bad. It's going down through here. U-shaped valley, glacial lake. Shaping of the land. As they flow, glaciers scour all the soil and carve the underlying rocks into shapes. An expert eye can recognize thousands of years later, long after the ice has disappeared. Glaciers cut U-shaped valleys, often with waterfalls entering a high on their sides. They leave moraines and carry loose rocks along the distance. Between ice ages, climate warms and the range of mountains are covered with vegetation. The valleys are V-shaped. During the ice age, the climate is too cold for plants and they disappear. Only the tops of mountains are visible. Or when the ice retreats, the valleys that remain are U-shaped, and because they have been carved out by slowly moving glaciers. Avalanches and mud flows. Obviously, kids are interested in these things, aren't they? Okay, I don't know. I'm pretty sure I'll get a phone call soon. So, avalanches and landslides. Mountain slopes and hillsides are not always stable. When rocks and soils and mud start to move downhill, the landslide occurs. When snow slips from a slope or a cliff, an avalanche occurs. The sliding material can move slowly or quickly. Gravity pulls it straight downwards, but part of the weight is directed downhill. Along the edge of the slope, an avalanche or landslide occurs when the downhill force is greater than the strength of the material. A solid rock cliff face is perfectly stable, but if the material is not firmly attached, it may move, especially if water makes the surface slippery. Landslides, rocks, falls, mudslides, avalanches can cause appalling damage. They can demolish buildings. They just wanted to get this in. I really know what kids love. After the eruption. In November 1985, the eruption in Navo, Colombia, melted ice and snow, which caused a devastating mud flow. 50 kilometers away, was engulfed in 40-meter wall of mud and ash, which killed more than 22,000 people. Good on you, kiddies. Okay, it's hard to see. It's like a picture. Here's the mountain. Path of mud flow, town of Amaro, all just completely covered in mud. I think full page illustration of this. Don't have much to say here. Weathering and erosion. When rock is exposed to atmosphere, wind, rain and ice, it begins to wear away. This is known as physical weathering. It grinds the rocks into soil particles of grains and stands, I think it's regolith it's called, and reduce mountain range to level plains. Another type of physical weathering happens when extreme pressure and heat deep underground causes the rock to break apart. Well, this is new. I have not heard that one before. Minerals and soils, bedrock, can also be broken down when acidic rainwater soaks downward. When a chemical reaction takes place, it's called chemical weathering. Rainwater reacts with lime or granite. Okay, rainwater reacts with granite, but which consists mainly of feldspar, mica, and quartz, and changes the feldspar and mica into clay, but does not affect the quartz. Erosion and removal of the products of weathering is by wind and water. So that's interesting. This is acidic. And we have a big diagram. Wear and tear. Weathering can change the land in many ways. Glaciers grind out valleys and transport rocks downhill. Rivers carve canyons and carry away loose rocks and dirt. Acidic rainwater dissolves limestone to form sandstones, caves. Sand and products of weathering form shifting dunes and are blown against rocks formation. Waves erode the coastal hills. We've got a general thing. Glaciers form huge piles of snow. They gouge U-shaped valleys. Rivers carve canyons. There's mesas and canyons. Water eats through some types of rocks and caves. Waves pound the shoreline, creating columns of stacks. eroded landscapes. Weathering and erosion reshape landscapes. At present, the world's fastest rate of erosion is found in the Himalayas. This mountain range, the highest in the world, is still rising as India pushes into Eurasia, but it's weathering away almost as fast. Over hundreds of millions of years, weathering erosion will level the mountain until it's a flat plain. Northern Canada, now a vast plain with a few low mountains, was once mountainous. Ocean waves are powerful agents of coastal erosion. The action produces coastal cliffs, caves, and stacks. In deserts, wind erosion creates strange landforms, and salt weathering produces oddly shaped rocks. Cave forms. Acidic rainwater dissolves calcium carbonate and limestone and carries it away, leaving behind space that becomes a cave as water erodes more material. Stalactites and stalagmites. Water dripping from the cave roof contains dissolved calcium carbonate. Some of the water evaporates. This forms pointy stalactites hanging down from the roof. As water rips down, calcium carbonate collects below the stalagmites and grow upwards from the cave floor. Columns and pillars. Stalactites and stalagmites grow to an average of 1 inch every 1,000 years. This is a very slow process, but eventually stalactites and stalagmites meet, forming pillars in the cave. Over time, pillars thicken and become columns. Pinnacles. Rain seldom falls in the desert, but when it does, it's often heavy and powerful. Erosion removes surface materials, but in some places, the covering of resistant rocks shields the rock beneath, which forms columns. Canyons. The force of water in rivers cuts canyons in land, sometimes very quickly. The world's deepest canyon is Kanyu Zumbu Canyon, Tibet. It cuts 5.3 kilometers into the surface. Oh, that's pretty amazing. 5.3 kilometers into the surface. That's almost unbelievable. Sea stacks. The coastal cliffs are made from rocks which vertical joints or faults waves can easily eat away at the cliffs, first creating, then eroding a headline to make this sea level caves. This produces an arch in rock which can collapse and leave a stack. A karst. Karst describes a hilly landscape usually made of limestone, which has been eroded by acidic rainwater. Much of the surface rock has dissolved to form rugged cone-shaped peaks, and there's large underground caves, lakes, and rivers. And it says here, erosion continues to sharpen karst peaks and wide channels into valleys to create a network of caves and underground water waves. The landscape of Shuai, China, consists of steep side hills and karst. The surface soil is thin, and most water flows in underground rivers. That ends this story. We're on to Oceans, episode 5. Thanks for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.